AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. And by propane. Propane is the energy for everyone, especially farmers. Environmentally friendly propane can fuel most anything on the farm. See how at propane.com. Wheat futures have clawed their way back to nearly steady prices, with SRW futures already on the top side of unchanged. Buying is back in the soybean oil market. We'll get the results of a study into what the bean oil is doing to improve air quality. And we'll get the details of the long-awaited 2020 and 21 crop disaster payments.
Live from Sugar Ray Day via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with a conversation with Floyd Vergara from Clean Fuels Alliance America. Then it's Paul Niefer, the farm CPA from Clifton Larson Allen. Right after the news, Karen Bonert from Farm Journal's Milk. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right. You've piqued my interest.
Sugar Ray Leonard's birthday today.
It is. I'll be darned.
World titles in five different weight divisions during his boxing career.
Yeah. Yeah.
Today's his birthday. Yeah. Happy birthday,
pound,
Mr. Leonard.
Yes. Happy birthday. All right. Welcome to AgriTalk.
Pound for pound. That's a lot of pounding on people, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Pound for pound. Maybe the best fighter ever. So, all right. Welcome. I'm Chip. That's Davis. And
Hello.
Didn't realize that Davis was such a Sugar Ray fan, but, you know.
Oh, huge fan. Huge.
Learn something new every day. Every day.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, including what we are going to learn today about the emergency, what exactly was it called? They changed it. It used to be the WIP Plus. It's the
ERP now.
Yeah, the Emergency Relief Program. So we will talk about that with Paul Niefer coming up in just a bit. He's got some examples that we can run through and try to figure out exactly what it might mean. But what it... When they start talking about payment limits on a program, you know that the potential is significant for payments from a program. There's $6 billion in this plan, man. That's a lot of money.
A lot of clams. Yeah.
That's right, it is. All right. Let's go ahead and get started with the news. What you got?
Chip, Ben Bernanke, the former Federal Reserve chair who headed the central bank during the 2008 financial crisis, warns that the nation is headed for a situation much like the 1970s, where Americans were losing their jobs but still facing higher prices at the grocery store and at the pump. He said the Fed's credibility with the public is going to be crucial to its ability to fight inflation, and it is something he is deeply worried about, given how polarized the nation appears to be. In addition, he remains concerned that supply chain problems continue for all types of goods.
Yeah, he's talking about stagflation. If we start seeing jobs numbers deteriorate and the employment situation worsen, that's a bad combination right there.
Well, according to the Port of Los Angeles executive director, there are no imminent signs of a slowdown in demand by American consumers. Telling Bloomberg Television there's, quote, nothing just yet, hinting that the U.S. is heading for a recession. He also indicated that ocean freight flowing through the country's busiest ports from China appear consistent despite lockdowns in the Asian nation. Chip, this one kind of came as a surprise to me.
Yeah, I would think nothing hinting that the U.S.
Right.
is heading
right.
for a recession. How about the first quarter negative GDP? That might be your first clue.
Well, AAA reports gasoline prices hit another record high Monday for the fourth week in a row, with the national average reaching $4.48 per gallon. The national average gallon of gas price was 40 cents more than a month ago and $1.43 higher than a year ago. Chip, only Georgia, Kansas, and Oklahoma post prices below $4 per gallon. Meanwhile, California and Hawaii own the highest prices, at $5.98 in California and $5.31 per gallon in Hawaii.
Man.
Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen is leaving Warsaw without a public pledge from Polish government officials to drop their opposition to a key part of a global corporate tax deal that Yellen identifies as a top priority. Warsaw's resistance is holding up a measure that would implement a 15% minimum corporate tax rate across the European Union. Chip, this is something we had talked about months ago, and then it sort of faded away, and now here it is in the news again.
Yeah. Yeah, it certainly is not. It's another one of those, you know, make sure that everybody's contributing their fair share types of taxes.
Yep. Well, Sweden's foreign minister today signed an application declaring the country's intent to join NATO, ending decades of military neutrality. Meanwhile, a Ukrainian national railway company will restrict corn transportation to the Danube port of Rhenai from May 18 for an indefinite period. This as the United Nations Secretary General pursues a deal with Russia, Turkey, and other nations to open up Ukrainian food exports to world markets. In a related note, USDA Secretary Vilsack says 80% of last year's Ukrainian crop had already been shipped before Russia began blocking the Black Sea ports. A bigger problem will be finding adequate storage space or shipping opportunities for this year's crop. And the U.S. hopes to convince India to reconsider its decision on its wheat export ban, as such restrictions would exacerbate food shortages. The U.S., which is president of the U.N. Security Council for this month, will host an event on food security this week. India will reportedly participate in the event. Chip, we mentioned Egypt yesterday as possibly being one of those nations that India would say, yeah, you guys just need too much. We're going to cut you guys off. It looks like that trade flows are going to remain open to Egypt.
Right, exactly. Egypt is on the list that of countries that India would be willing to export some wheat to. That's an important note.
Interesting.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Davis. Karen Bonert joins us now. She's the editorial director at Farm Journal's Milk. Good morning, Karen.
Good morning, Chip.
Hey, pretty cool news to talk about. What's going on up in Idaho?
Yeah, well, our friends at Chobani gave a $1 million contribution towards the nation's largest research dairy in the Magic Valley of Idaho. And so it was made payable to the University of Idaho Lead Center for Agriculture, Food, and Environment, which is basically Idaho Cafe for short. And the cool thing is, obviously, it'll be geared towards scientific research, but it's going to really hone in on sustainability. And the results from the site's research will then immediately be able to be applied to Idaho dairy farms, as well as around the western part of the United States. But the cool thing, Chip, is that there are other research dairies out there, but this one will include a 2,000 cow research dairy and a 640-acre demonstration farm, as well as a drone-based education center. So it's a really cool thing. And so the dairy industry, as you're aware of, has aggressive goals to become carbon neutral and maximize water quality and so much more. And so the center will be conducting cutting-edge research to really focus on that. I have to tell you, though, that the CEO of Idaho Dairymen's Association stated that dairy producers, you know, sustainability is not always the most welcome term. Because we feel like, as for producers, they feel like, well, great, now I have to do more with less. But this research will really figure out how to help them and ask those tough questions so that they can help producers accomplish the goals that the industry has set. So this is a $22.5 million project set for next month, and the first stage of construction will wrap up in 2023 with the university to begin milking cows. So a really cool thing.
Very cool. Very cool, Karen. Very cool. Yeah, we need to stay up on that. Learn more about it at www.dairyherd.com. Thank you, Karen. It's Karen Bonert, editorial director for Farm Journal's Milk. We'll be right back with more AgriTalk in a moment.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Clarifly Larvicide, your feed-through fly control solution.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
AgriTalk is brought to you by new Bond Silage Speed C, aerobically stable corn silage in 14 days. Learn more at bondsilageusa.com/speed. It's fast.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Lorre. Glad that you're with us this morning. Davis Michelson is here as well.
Hello.
Davis,
yes.
If we go back to late last summer, last fall, and through the spring, we've been talking a lot about renewable diesel and the push for that refiners have got on to produce more and more and more renewable diesel. We can't forget, though, that biodiesel is still an option that is available immediately to help add to the nation's fuel supply and to help achieve some of the environmental air quality goals that EPA has got, that the Biden administration has set, and just to clean up the environment. So yesterday we saw a new study that has just been completed, and it was released by the Clean Fuels Alliance of America. Floyd Vergara is the director of state governmental affairs for the Clean Fuels Alliance, and he joins us right now. Floyd, welcome to AgriTalk.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Excellent. Okay, Floyd, so give us the details of the study. When was it conducted? Where was it conducted? Who did it? You know, let's get to the foundation of it.
Yeah, sure. So this is the study goes back to 2020. It's covered two phases. The phase one covered sites in the West Coast, the East Coast, primarily focusing on, and Colorado, primarily focusing on transportation sectors and also the heating oil sectors. Mm-hmm. The latest study that was the subject of this press release covered more of the Southwest, the Midwest, some states in the East Coast, and North Carolina and District of Columbia. The sites that were covered mapped back to the American Lung Association's State of the Air report that identified the worst cities for exposure to a variety of pollutants. In this case, we were focused on the smallest particulate matter, PM2.5, which has substantial adverse health impacts on people. So the study looked at a variety of sources where high diesel use occurs. This is ports, rail yards, logistics facilities, freight transport corridors. You know, that sort of facility.
Okay. And there was there a special focus on some of the environmental justice communities? Yeah, what Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg has talked about this, that when some of the major arteries were built into the major cities, a lot of times the socially disadvantaged or economically disadvantaged areas are where they put that highway. Was there a special focus on those areas?
You know, that's a great question. When we started this study, we did not set out to look at environmental justice, from the get-go. We were really just asking a basic question, which is, what would the benefits be to people living near facilities that use a lot of petroleum diesel? We knew from the literature, from decades of literature, that biodiesel in particular has a significant benefit in terms of reducing diesel particulate matter. So we wanted to get a sense. So that was in the literature, but the literature never actually translated that into relatable metrics such as premature deaths, cancers avoided, asthma cases reduced, that sort of thing. So we wanted to take the literature and the analysis to the next level, which is to quantify those benefits into terms that regular folks can really relate to and understand on a basic level.
Gotcha. Okay, so what Trinity Consultants conducted the study. What did they find? What were the results?
So what they found was using the same sort of the same exact models that US EPA and the California Air Resources Board and other prominent regulatory agencies, the same sort of air modeling tools and health risk assessment tools, they found that around these 27, 28 sites where folks were living, that that a switch to biodiesel from petroleum diesel would result in enormous benefits. And we suspected that would be the case from the literature, as I said earlier, but I think the results when translated into these sort of metrics that folks can relate to is really eye-opening. And again, like we mentioned earlier, we didn't set out to look at environmental justice per se, but as you noted, environmental justice and disadvantaged communities have historically been located near these facilities. So I think the insights provided by this study, can be really useful for the folks who live in those communities, as well as the policymakers who look at ways to clean up the air, especially around those areas. So the results, just going to the meat of this, is switching to biodiesel, to 100% biodiesel, would prevent in these areas over 910 premature deaths per year, more than 456,000 asthma cases per year, more than 142,000 sick days per year, and reduce cancer cases by over 9,400 over a 70-year time frame. And when you use standard EPA valuation methods to calculate the cost of and the benefits of those savings, you would be looking at a total savings of over $7.7 billion per year.
Wow.
And mind you, these results are just for the 28 sites that were looked at in this study.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's dozens more, perhaps hundreds more similar sites across the country. So literally talking about the tip of the iceberg in terms of the potential benefits of this sort of switch.
Yeah, well, and the impact on the health costs, that $7.5 billion, that's only part of the economic advantage there, too, because if you've got 142,000 fewer sick days, you've got that much more economic activity being developed by people being able to stay at work, right?
Exactly. That $7.7 billion, factors in the benefit to the economy from people not having to call in sick, the benefit to the economy from folks not having to stay at home with their asthmatic kids because they're being exposed to too much pollutants. There's all kinds of consequences for the economy, as you pointed out. So I think this is a really insightful study. This is consistent with other work that's been done by American Lung Association, other environmental groups.
Timing of the release couldn't be better, Floyd, with EPA Administrator Regan headed to Capitol Hill today and tomorrow for testimony. And it's budget related is testimony is, but conversations about this and air quality issues are going to happen. This sends him in there with some a fairly powerful study, doesn't it?
And that's exactly right. And, I would point out that, when we started this study, we were looking at states that were aggressively pursuing climate policies. So trying to reduce greenhouse gases, which, of course, biodiesel and renewable diesel have 74 to 85 to 90% reduction in greenhouse gases. So they're already right out of the gate, fantastic for reducing greenhouse gases
right.
from the transportation sector immediately, as you pointed out. But you can also point at the immediate health benefits that these fuels provide. And I think that's not played out as much as it should be in these conversations that EPA and Congress and policymakers yeah. at the state level are having.
Yeah, good stuff. And I love that bioheat program in the Northeast. That's added so much demand, hasn't it?
It has. And we yeah. looked at bioheat, part of the study was looking at switching to B100 for heating oil applications. And we found similar sort of results in the Northeast where these fuels can yeah. be used and are being yeah. used.
Yeah, very good. And when renewable diesel becomes more readily available, the health benefits and the air quality will be advanced in a similar fashion there. So looking forward to that. Floyd, good stuff, man. Thank you so much for making time for us today.
Well, thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Yep, that is Floyd Vergara. He is the Director of State Governmental Affairs for the Clean Fuels Alliance of America. Up next, Farm CPA Paul Niefer here on AgriTalk.
What if your commercial beef herd could be better than you thought possible? Genetic testing can help give you more confidence about what your herd is made of, and more importantly, what it can be. Inherit Select from Zoetis provides data-driven genetic insights to help you make more informed selection, breeding, and culling decisions about your cows and heifers. The journey from genetic potential to reality begins with Inherit Select. Ask a genetics rep how to save on testing with our whole herd promotion. Go to beefgenetics.com/radio.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from ProFarmer.
And joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beej, it looked like that wheat market was going to back off today, but here it is, clawing its way back to the top side of unchanged.
Boy, all kinds of moving parts, not only in the wheat market, but across the grain and soy markets this morning. We gapped higher overnight in the wheat markets. And then at a point, the HRW contracts were working on key reversals, and we've rebounded from that. And here we are trading with a firmer tone. At mid-morning, so all kinds of movement in the wheat market, but really it was soybeans that kind of led the price recovery and soy oil, and now we're seeing the meal market back off. So that spread unwinding between the long soy oil and short meal that we've seen recently, they're back to spreading that again, and just like I said, all kinds of moving parts this morning in the grain
right.
and soy market.
Right. The crop condition report for winter wheat, it showed that HRW crop continues to deteriorate, right?
Yeah, definitely. And kind of going two different directions there. HRW declining and SRW actually improving. So, two different crops, completely different crops, and rated completely differently this year.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. And we finally got... we're at least half done on corn planting now. As of Sunday, it was at 49% for the nation. All right, take us over to the livestock trades and follow through buying in hogs.
Yeah, absolutely. Day three. So, it's critical. Fund type of moves and corrections typically come in three-day waves. And so tomorrow sets up as the critical day if we can finish out with the gains that we're seeing here mid-morning. And then the cattle market, mixed tone in both live cattle and feeder cattle. Some early starter trade in the cash market at a little bit weaker prices.
Excellent. Thanks, Brian.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. When news breaks, the newsmakers talk about it on AgriTalk with Chip Flory.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Glad that you are here. Davis is with us.
Yes, sir.
And yesterday we talked about this, but I'll give it to you again. The U.S. Department of Agriculture yesterday announced that commodity and specialty crop producers impacted by natural disaster events in 2020 and 21 will soon begin receiving emergency relief payments totaling approximately $6 billion through the Farm Service Agency's new emergency relief program to offset crop yield and value losses. Okay, so how do we qualify? Who qualifies? How big might the payments be? Let's get some of the details. Paul Niefer, Farm CPA from CLA Connect, joins us right now. Mr. Niefer, welcome back. How are you?
Doing great. We actually have some sunshine today. Compared to last year when we had a drought, we actually have too much rain, but we're not complaining. Believe me, Good. We're not complaining.
Excellent. Excellent. Okay. How do we qualify?
Yeah, essentially, if you've signed up for crop insurance, in my opinion, you almost automatically qualify. And they've sort of, this is the replacement, I guess I'm going to call it the replacement of the old WIP Plus, which, right. was sort of hurricanes and wildfires and winter storms. Well, this is much broader. I mean, they've thrown in almost every weather event, including one that hit you a couple of years ago, the derecho in Iowa. That's part of it. And they've added in drought. And that's the one, I think, really with crop insurance. A lot of those farmers out there that maybe they were at the 60% level and really didn't get a payment last year or back in 2020 because of drought, likely now they're going to get a pretty good sized payment.
Okay. Is there an application process to go through?
In a way, yes, but they're essentially they're going to create the application for you. So they'll start, working on the application, getting it sent out. My understanding, and this is unofficial, but my understanding is the program really is going to open next Monday. So at that point, the local office, and I think the local office really hasn't been trained yet. So when I say it's going to open up next week, I have a feeling maybe we got to give the local office another week or two. But my understanding, reading the fact sheet, is that they're going to pre-populate the amount that the farmer qualifies, and then it's up to the farmer to verify that. Now, again, if they're pre-populating, what is the farmer going to do? He or she's likely going to accept what they send out.
Okay. As I understand, there's going to be two phases of the ERP. What are the two? What's the difference between the two?
So the first phase is for, I'm going to say they're really focusing in on the crop side, both specialty crops and the non-specialty, corn, soybeans, wheat, cotton, rice, and so on, the larger crops. That's what they're focusing in on. The phase two is they're going to look at, okay, who did we pay under phase one and who did we miss? So the ones that we missed, we're going to then come back with phase two and make those payments to those that we missed. That could be maybe over on the livestock side. Essentially, they have $10 billion available, and they're doing $6 billion on phase one.
Okay. All right. How are the payments going to be calculated?
So essentially, they go back and they sort of redo your crop insurance. So let's say that you are a farmer that elected 80% coverage on wheat out in my area, because that's who really had the large payments last year. So you elected 80% on wheat, on RP coverage. Well, under this program, they're going to go back and recalculate it, assuming that you elected 95%. You're going to then say, okay, under 95%, let's say your claim would have been $300 an acre. Under 80%, you got paid $150 per acre. They're going to take that $300 minus the 150, but then they're going to add back in the premium that you paid. I forgot to mention that in the blog post yesterday, but they're going to add back the premium. So let's say you're going to get a payment of $150 an acre, just an example. Then you're going to take all your acres, you're going to multiply that by whatever it is. Then you're going to apply a 75% rate to it. You're not going to get paid 100%. You're going to get paid 75%. And then on top of it, unlike crop insurance, where there's no payment cap, this definitely has a payment cap. And for a lot of larger producers, that's going to bite them fairly quickly.
Okay. Looks like the payment cap is it 125?
Well, it's 125 for specialty crops, you know, potatoes, fruits, vegetables, those type of crops, plus 125 for all others. So it potentially could be 250,000 if you are, you know, you grow multiple type of crops. Now, there is a provision that says if you can prove to the FSA that more than 75% of your adjusted gross income is from farming, they're going to allow you to increase that payment cap, and it'll be 900,000 for specialty crops, but only 250,000 for corn, soybeans, and so on. And remember, if you're a corporation or an LLC farming, you know, farming as an LLC, you have one payment cap, even though you might have six owners. If you're a general partnership with six equal owners, then you're going to essentially have six payment caps. So it just depends on your structure. There is no AGI limit. I mean, you could have a couple million dollars of income and still qualify.
Okay.
But certainly there's going to be a payment cap.
Okay. All right. Very good. Now, that was at 80% and they recalculate it at 95%. What if your coverage was, say, 60%?
You know, at 60%, they recalculated at 85%. So under this program, the lower the coverage that you elected, more likely the bigger your payment. So, you know, the difference between 60 and 85 is 25 basis points. The difference between 80 and 95 is only 15. And a lot of those people that had 60%, I was sort of doing some calculations out here at 60%, they likely didn't have a payment. This is going to give them a payment. But again, if you're a larger producer, that payment cap is going to kick in fairly quickly. You know, you might have, if you'd done 85%, you might have qualified for a $400,000 crop insurance payment, and this is going to cap you at $125,000. So you just got to be careful, just because it's a larger percentage at that lower level, the payment cap can jump in fairly quickly.
Okay. What if you were uninsured? Is there a payment there for you? Is that phase two?
Well, when you say uninsured, if you signed up for NAP, you know, if you at least signed up for NAP, because there is a difference on the NAP catastrophic level, you're at 75% for the ERP, and then everything above that, you're an extra 30% essentially. If you didn't sign up for crop insurance, it's likely, based on what I'm reading on the fact sheet, but doesn't necessarily tell you that you may not qualify. Now, the other thing too, is if you do get a payment under this program, you're required to get crop insurance for the next 2 years.
Oh, now, okay.
Does it have to be at the same level? It's a little silent or a little vague on that, but you're required to get crop insurance for 23 and 24 for sure.
Right. Okay. There's some that are going to ask, because of crop prices and potential revenue in 2022, Paul, can you push the payment out to 23?
You know, farmers never want to do that. You know, come on, Chip. They never want to save on taxes. If they received a payment for 2020 or 2021, they're not allowed to push it out to 2023. Now, potentially, and I don't think it'll happen, but potentially they might get a payment for the 2022 crop that could be pushed out to 2023. And I did get a question. Somebody called me this morning about Prevent Plant, if there's going to be any payment on that. I'm not sure. I didn't, you know, it could be, maybe there'll be some extra payment on that. I just don't know, because that is one of the things that are covered under the weather is excessive water. So that certainly would be the Prevent Plant. So for those in North Dakota and Minnesota, and the one that called me was Mississippi, there could be some additional payment there. I'm just not exactly sure how that's calculated.
Okay. All right. Now, you mentioned drought, and I see here in the press release from USDA, where was it? If it was D2, severe drought for eight, and that's on the U.S. Drought Monitor. So yep. D2 for eight consecutive weeks, or D3
or higher.
Yeah, for drought intensity would get you qualified.
Yeah, and they have a link to the 2020 counties that qualify, and then the 2021 counties that qualify.
Okay.
Certainly in our area, you know, Montana, Idaho, Oregon, Washington, California, and so on, they all qualified in 2021 because of the drought that we had.
Right, right. Yeah, the big issue here is going to be that derecho from 2020. That's going to add up the payments pretty quickly, isn't it?
Yeah, I would think that for those farmers that maybe didn't get that, you know, they got a decent sized crop insurance payment, but not a huge one. You now, let's say they were at the 80% level, and now you recalculate at 85%. Remember that extra 15%, it's all profit. I mean, there, you know, if you got a payment at 80, everything between 80 and 95 is going to be a payment. Now it's restricted to 75% of the payment limit. But yeah, I think the wheat growers are going to be a huge payment. The derecho in 2020, some of those hurricanes that happened in 2020 and 2021, they got some crop insurance, but now this is going to be even more. So it's, you know, that $6 billion is going to go through fairly quickly.
Man, oh man. We talk about big dollar amounts going through them quickly on a regular basis anymore, Paul.
It's
pretty amazing. Hey, buddy, thanks for the details. Appreciate you.
You're welcome. Thanks, Chip.
You bet. That's Paul Niefer, Farm CPA, at Farm CPA on Twitter. You can read his columns on Ag Web and at CLA Connect. All right, when we come back, Davis and I will wrap up this morning's first hour of AgriTalk.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Find farm equipment on Machinery Pete's May 17th online auction. No reserve, no buyer fees. Start bidding now. Auctions.machinerypete.com. And welcome back to AgriTalk, everyone. Gosh, I'm glad you've tuned in this morning. I'm just going to let this pass because I got something else instead. I don't have time to get into this debate here.
Right.
You seemed whelmed by the fact that it's Sugar Ray Leonard's birthday today, Chip Flory.
Okay.
So I've decided, you know, let's find out who else shares a birthday with Sugar Ray Leonard.
All right. If
we're talking musicians, here's one of your favorites, Enya. Born in Donegal County, Ireland in 1961. Sail away, sail away, sail away.
Yeah.
Sounds like coffee sort of perking in the background.
Right.
Trent Reznor, Nine Inch Nails, 1965. Okay. French pianist and composer Eric Satie, born in 1866. If some of you have taken some intermediate level piano lessons, you'll be familiar with his work. Canadian ice dancer, Tessa Virtue, not to be mistaken with Dick Tracy's gal, Tess Trueheart, Tessa Virtue. Actor Bill Paxton. Born this day in 1955. Sportscaster Jim Nance, Charlotte, North Carolina. And my personal favorite, born today in Dodge City, Kansas in 1936, Dennis Hopper. You might remember him from such films as Easy Rider and the Kevin Costner hydrologic post-apocalyptic thriller Waterworld, when Hopper's character in a speech promised, quote, "If there's a river, we'll dam it. If there's a tree, we'll ram it. Because I'm talking progress, baby." Dennis Hopper.
Wow. Wow. Speaking of, since you mentioned Bill Paxton.
Yeah.
Do you know what day he died?
Ooh, no.
Or did you think that he was still with us?
I guess I didn't get that far. We're doing birthdays today, not death days.
Okay, well, he died February 25th, 2017.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a while already. Wow.
How do you remember that?
Because as soon as you said it, I'm like, wait a second. No, he's not with us anymore.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So I did the Google machine.
I thought maybe you were just that big a Paxton fan.
No. No, I mean, I'm a big fan, though. I mean,
sure.
I don't know if Twister or Tombstone would be my favorite movie that he's in. Probably Twister. Probably Twister. But Tombstone. There's a movie that if you're flipping through and you see it, you just stop.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. For me, you know, sometimes it feels like maybe it gets a little long, but I watch it every time. You're exactly right. Every time I see it pop up, oh, you got to watch Tombstone. I'm your Huckleberry. Freaking Val Kilmer. You betcha.
Val Kilmer.
You betcha.
Yes.
Right. Speaking of the environment, I really liked Floyd Vergara's take here because we have talked about why are the climate people not catching on to, you know, the benefits that biodiesel, that biofuels just in general, the value that they can bring to the table in cleaning up the environment. Now, he's taking it one step further here, talking about health benefits to human beings.
Yeah, yeah. Now, the important thing about the environmental benefits that the biofuels bring is that they can bring them immediately.
Immediately, yes.
Immediately. So there's all these big goals out there on the green energy. Snap your fingers. Everybody's got an electric car and plenty of power to clean power to charge those batteries and everything. That's the assumption, the plan, the want of the progressives. Okay. It's so far from reality. It's not even funny.
Mm-hmm.
There are ways to advance toward the goals available to you right now. All you got to do is open your eyes, accept the science, accept the science, and start to promote the use of more biofuels. You can do it right now.
Yep. And adding in the, you know, drilling it down to the granular level of the individual human beings, just overall health improvements. I think is a really, really great play and something definitely to keep in mind, something that I hadn't necessarily considered as top of mind when thinking about the benefits of biofuels.
Yeah.
We got the wheat tour starting today, the Wheat Quality Council tour. Should be interesting to see what they find. They're starting in Kansas? Do I have that right?
Well, the wheat quality portion of it is going to be primarily Kansas, although there will be other groups that kind of out on satellite tours, Texas, Colorado, Oklahoma. I think, though, there will be some people in Nebraska as well. Those reports will kind of filter into the, into social media and into the media as well.
Sure.
Today, day one of the tour, they are going from Manhattan west to Colby in Kansas. Okay. So northern Kansas is what I would call it. And man, the reports that are out there on Twitter right now, hashtag Wheat Tour 22, a lot of you can still see rows in a lot of the fields, Davis. I mean, that's how little growth there is in some of these fields. There are others that look really, really good, but there's more wheat that is struggling than not, and it's been showing up in the Kansas crop conditions all season long, right? And it's not just the wheat that is rated, or the lack of wheat that is rated good to excellent. It's the wheat that is also rated poor to very poor. We got to keep that in mind, too.
Have you seen this week's numbers?
Yeah, Kansas is 17% very poor, and 24% poor. Oof. It's only 22% good and 2% excellent. So they're going to be looking at a really, really tough wheat crop out there, and we'll be getting details back from the wheat tour this week. All right, thank you so much for listening this morning. You got to come back this afternoon. Chip Nellinger, Blue Reef Agri-Marketing, will be our guest. And tomorrow morning, we've got the Farmer Forum right here on AgriTalk.
Windows down, country sound, FM on the radio.